Hey, Stripper Whisperers, Corey Michaelis here with my live stand-up comedy tour dates. If you don't want to hear them, fast forward 30 seconds twice and then rewind 15 seconds once. I will be in Dubai doing a tour of shows there at the end of June, the 24th through the 30th. But the two big shows I want you to know about are July 10th, Historic Everett Theater, my hometown, with my best friend Andrew Rivers, and the night before, July 9th, at the North Bend Theater, his hometown. Super excited about those shows, so come out to one of them. Like, review, subscribe to the podcast if you're nasty.
Hey, everybody, welcome back to Stripper Whisper, the podcast where I get behind the G-string and interview strippers about their lives outside the clubs, what it's like working in the clubs, and how we can all be better or good customers in their spaces. Today, for season two, again, we are virtual with Ramona from Portland. Say hey, Ramona.
Hi, everybody.
Welcome. So glad to have you. And of course, the podcast is interesting all by itself just to listen to. But before we get started, some people like to put a face to the voice. So check out Ramona on her Instagram at dancer_nextdoor. Also, that's her handle on Twitter and OnlyFans. Go give her money. Also, you can check out the video of the podcast today on our Patreon page. Just patreon.com/stripperwhisper. Glad to have you. Welcome to the show. I need a shot for Liquid Courage to talk to you strippers because you're so intimidating and gorgeous. Cheers. You may have seen the foam on the top of that. It's because I just realized I'm out of vodka. So that was a shot of Rainier. Rainier beer shot. Doesn't really count, I guess. But you guys know about Rainier down in Portland?
Oh, yeah.
Call it Rainier?
Rainier.
PBR, Rainier.
What else do you have? We have a lot of... I only know what my club serves, basically, right, and what the grocery store has.
Write in with all of your your shitty beer recommendations. I know people have Schmidt's one, Schmidt Ice, and high school.
See,
that's what everybody drank. Natty Ice. There's one. I didn't drink till I was 21, so I didn't drink in high school, not even a sip, because I'm.
Yeah, I didn't drink until I was 20, until I was living out here.
Yeah, there you go. I was a little bit of a goody two shoes, and it worked out fine. It worked out fine. Now I'm not anymore. Now I have a stripper podcast. So
now I'm a stripper. I mean,
there you go. Hey, well, on that note, welcome. We like to open up the podcast with sort of a explanation from your perspective on how this connection happened. How did you find out about me or the podcast or vice versa? Do you recall?
I mean, I remember when quarantine started and I was like, damn, I need to like be productive through this 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 month break. And so I had just finished a podcast, like a sex ed podcast. And I remember following you, then I completely forgot about it, never listened to it until you messaged me on Twitter. So I feel a little bit bad.
No worries at all. No, that's fine. I am happy to have these connections. It's been much easier to garner virtual interviews than it was to try and get live interviews.
I could imagine that, yeah.
Hey, you want to come to my hotel room and do an interview? And they're like, sure, you have a podcast, you queer, you weirdo. I'm like, no, I...
yeah, sure.
you creepy weirdo. I meant to say creep. I don't know. Why did I say queer? I'm weird. But I am kind of that, too. We all are. A lot of people in Portland are. It's kind of the nature of Portland and Seattle, so... and that's where you are. How long have you been there? Since you were 20, you said? Is that right?
19, 20. I moved in 2016. So however long that's been, 5 years going on.
Oh, yeah. That's wild. That's fun. Portland's a great, great city. I love performing there and hanging out down there. A lot of the interviews have been with strippers who are from Portland, because when I was doing live interviews, that was the easiest place to find folks. And Elle Stanger helped me out. And
oh, yeah. Ranks. That was the podcast that I finished, was hers.
Hey, there it is. It was our first episode ever. And she has been very, very helpful to the podcast. And you know, initially I was like, this was my idea, and I know I'm a straight white guy, but, and I'm probably not the right dude to do it, but it was my idea. So she was like affirming. She's like, you know what? It's really not, you're doing a good job of asking the right questions. Plus, we need people of all different types to be normalizing this work. So,
and as long as you like, if you make a mistake, you grow from it and don't just like sweep it under the rug and ignore it. As long as you're continually learning, that's right. That's what it is.
Yeah. Part of the ideal of it is like me being, I know some things, but like also I'm ignorant because I don't, you would know way more than me. So you tell me how it's supposed to be, how you prefer it to be. And yeah.
Every dancer has different opinions too. Like, we're not one person. I can't speak for all dancers, you know.
It's one of the biggest mistakes. I taught American history or world history for years, but in America, it's one of the biggest mistakes we make is the presumption that, like, we really want to group people. We really want to go, like, you know, oh, but I know a person who's black who likes to be called black, and I know one who likes to be called African American. It's like, yeah.
Isn't that crazy? See differences of opinion.
Isn't that crazy? Two different people have two different positions. It's like, but it happens with like usually underrepresented groups and or disrespected groups, like sex workers happen to be in oftentimes disrespected or not treated as typical people, and you are. But how long ago did you start dancing?
So I started in, I remember, because my first shift was on 9/11. Yeah, so it would have been, I just had my 1 year anniversary this past November. Okay. So
yeah, not 9/11 2001. You were a baby.
I was in kindergarten.
So not then, but you okay? So I mean, were there, I mean, it's been a while, but still,
yeah, a little bit of a baby stripper. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's, so you're new to it. That's really pretty recent. Yeah. But 9/11's been a while is what I was actually thinking. Cause so was it still a thing? Was it still kind of awkward, or was that brought up, or was there, I mean, God forbid, jokes?
Probably, but the club I worked at, it was a slow club, like a lot of blue collar people. So I just kind of banked on there being, you know, ex service members there. So I just tried to be respectful, not really sure. Bringing up that much, because that's a whole thing.
It is a whole thing.
I'm not trying to touch a nerve on that day, you know?
Yeah. Also, your first day, you're not trying to be like getting into a fight with somebody over your Twin Towers reference or something. I didn't ask you this in advance, I usually do, but do you want to talk about what clubs you've worked or where you work, or is that
yeah, sure.
Yeah, okay, cool. Where did you start? Where was that one? What was the first
one? I started at Dancing Bear in North Portland, which I've heard there's another Dancing Bear in Washington. We get mixed up because Dancing Bear is really close to the Washington border, but the Dancing Bear in Washington got busted for like drugs and prostitution and things. And we always have to clarify, we're not them.
That was not us.
That was not us.
Cause we haven't been caught yet. No, just kidding.
But they actually just put their building up for sale. So they're closed permanently. And I've been working at Deviate since the middle of February. Which is in Southeast Portland, if anybody knows.
Southeast Portland. Okay, so it's not downtown. It's on the other side of the river. All right. And I haven't been to either. I don't think I've driven by Dancing Bear. And DV8 is spelled D, the letter, V, the letter, 8, the number. So check it out if you are in the Portland area. You know, I won't say not right now, because this might, when this releases, we're going to really hope that it's open.
Well, we've got a tent going, so.
All right.
I am working right now.
So it's technically open and under the tent. I will be driving through on Saturday, so maybe I'll pop in. I was going to get steak bites from Acropolis.
We have steak bites.
Okay. Well, hey, there you go.
And
they're, you guys are open.
They're good. So, yeah, I'll be there on Saturday.
Sold. wonderful. So, yeah, go check out Lacey. Sorry, not Lacey. I didn't change that name. That's not her real name. Don't Google her. What's the Mickey part? Mickey, I mean, I know. So
when I worked at Dancing Bear,
yeah,
I was Mickey because there was already a girl named Ramona. And just like ask you when you're filling out the paperwork when you get hired. And since it was my first time, I was in the car like, what's my name going to be? It's going to be Ramona. Got this. Walk in. They're like, okay, what do you want your dance name to be? And I'm like, Ramona. And they're like, we already have a Ramona. Pick another one. And I'm like, fuck, I didn't plan for this. So I ended up with Mickey, but when I went to DV8, I could be Ramona. So
yeah. There you go. And is there any significance to either one of those, or specifically, or is it just like out of the ether?
Mickey came kind of out of the ether. That was a panic decision.
Yeah.
But Ramona, if you've ever seen Scott Pilgrim, then you know.
I have. That's a good film. Big fan. So you started a little over a year ago, Dancing Bear, DV8 now, and you just thought, you know what? I would be really good at this. Or how did you decide?
So I did it kind of backwards. I started pole dancing in the January before I started dancing at clubs.
Oh.
So
fun or fitness or both? Okay.
Both.
Yeah.
I've always been interested and done kind of like acrobatic physical stuff. So I was a gymnast. I would have been a diver if my school had a diving team. So all that kind of like flips and tricks stuff, super into that. So when I moved out here, like, I didn't have an outlet for it. And after like 3 years, I was like, I need to do something. And I was like, I can pole dance. Like, I'm not shy. I don't mind wearing short shorts and a sports bra in front of a bunch of people.
Okay.
Seems pretty cool. So I started doing it. And turns out, if you work in the service industry, like I do, comparatively, pole classes are very expensive.
Okay.
So after a while, I was like, you know, I don't want to stop doing this, but
I like to flip the money situation.
Yeah, I was like, and then I was like, well, let's try it. And I did, and now I'm here.
There you go. That's great. And yes, you're. Although dancers do, in most clubs, have to pay for like, what is it? Is it called a stage fee in your city? Or
yep.
But presumably, you're making all that back and then some.
Luckily, Portland stage fees are pretty low. Like I think, right now, because we're in a tent, our stage fee is lower than normal. Mm-hmm. Because we don't have many of the things that we would normally have inside. But in regular times, my club actually has one of the highest stage fees in town, I think. And it's still so low compared to like big cities.
Right.
So.
And there's so many clubs, maybe there's some form of like a, I don't know, it's driven it down because of supply or something. I don't know.
Well, the thing is that with house fees, there's not really, from a dancer's perspective, there's not really a great reason to have them. Because on the one hand, like, you're paying for the security who's going to help you out if you're in a situation, or like paying for, they're called house moms. They're like the liaison between dancers and club management, or they like have stuff in the dressing room if you forget it, or like in really big clubs, they'll like bring a crock pot or something for all the girls in the back. But like, I haven't really seen that in Portland. So you're like, well, what am I paying for? Sometimes it's like to rent the stage, which, yeah, that makes sense.
Like a hairstylist or something.
Yeah, yeah, that's the general consensus of why we pay that. But, you know, we pay to work, and every time the money gets worse, we're like, why are we paying this? But right. Like at the club I'm at now, it pays the security's hourly wages. Okay. So I can't argue with that because I love our security.
Yeah,
they're great.
They're helpful and necessary, and that's great. You have a good relationship there, and they're tough, hopefully. I've always wondered, though, you know, with any business that is service in nature, like, I always wonder, hey, if someone just swooped in, business owner, and was like, I'm going to do it different. I'm going to do, you know, no stage fees. I'm going to do, I don't know, amazing food. I'm going to do, you know, just flip the script on some of the typical things. Maybe the business model wouldn't work, but I guess it's harder or whatever, but it seems like short-sighted to me to be like, ah, we're just going to have, you know, shitty bar food we order from one of those big chains that drops it off frozen. Yes, there we go. I couldn't come up with one. Thank you. And we're going to make, you know, all the dancers pay a stage fee, and that's going to take care of it. And we're going to, you know, it's just going to be kind of, you know, like it's a comedy club. Just a quick, like if you, similar thing of like, we're going to crack down on all of, you know, hecklers. We're going to pay the comics a little bit more than any other club does. We're going to have amazing food and specialty cocktails, and not just do like poorly poured cocktails in plastic cups. I just feel like maybe you'd stand out, but I don't know.
I mean, from a business perspective, you're increasing a lot of costs by doing that.
Yeah.
So you might have to like increase the door fee or make it like more exclusive, cater to a higher clientele. Just in general. But I will say there is a club, I believe it's called Venus, and it's in Miami. I'll have to double check later. But it doesn't have a stage fee because it's owned by an ex-dancer. So the thing is, a lot of these clubs are just, you know, old white guys, rich white guys that are like, oh, well, what do I like and what sells and where can I get money? And so all of the pyramid except the top might be made of people who have worked in the industry for a really long time, but that crowning piece is still someone who doesn't fully get it.
Yeah. They're the decision maker and they don't get it. And that's the same. This is part of the podcast. And I say it every show, but, that there's similarities between the industries of stand-up comedy and clubs and stripping and strip clubs. And similar thing, the best comedy clubs are owned by former former comedians. So they kind of get it and they focus on how to keep us happy. And, you know, then the result is they end up with the best talent. And so it seems to me it would be a, you know, sort of a similar thing in strip clubs, hopefully. You're still working a little bit in a tent.
In a tent.
Less hours, I presume, less shifts, or how's that playing out?
So when we were working inside during the pandemic, we were open to 10. Now we're allowed to be open from noon to 11. So my shift is actually a half hour longer. Gotcha. But there are less girls per shift. So instead of scheduling like 13 people for a night shift, only six are scheduled.
Gotcha. And now that I asked that question, how much did you dance before there was a pandemic lockdown? It must not have been very long.
No. So there I only worked for like 2 weeks before the club shut down. So I would do like two nights there and one night at Dancing Bear. And then my regular job that I worked like 40 hours a week at also.
Holy hell. What do you do besides work?
Take pole classes.
good.
Yeah, it was a busy bee.
You didn't learn as much on the job per se as maybe some other folks. You came in with some skills and ability and knowledge on the pole and on the stage.
Well, I mean, the thing is, pole tricks look really fancy and they're really impressive, but it's not what makes you money in the club. You know, you're much more likely to make more money from talking to someone and making a connection and then going back and doing lap dances than being really impressive on stage and wasting a bunch of energy doing that, hoping that, you know, some dude from Atlanta who pole tricks are their shit is going to come and throw $100 on you stage. Like, that's probably not going to happen. Even if it does, it's only going to happen one time.
So psychology or humor classes might be more effective than pole classes if you're going to start becoming.
Oh yeah. Communication.
Communications. Yeah.
Different modalities of communicating is much more important.
Well, on that note, what's your game? What's your, do you got jokes? Do you got, what's your charm? How do we, you don't have to give it all away, but in general.
Well, if you didn't guess it by the usernames, I don't really go for the like super flirty, I'm gonna whisper in your ear. Okay. You're so hot. Oh my God. I don't do that. I'm more of a girl next door type of, like, I love to make jokes if you get my humor. Mm-hmm. But I also have a lot of serious conversations with customers. Like, I don't know if it's just this year, but I've had a lot of conversations about politics with people, which can be hard to, you know, smooth into like navigate, flirting and turning into desire. But, you know, it's what I know how to talk about.
Right. And it's so prevalent and it's elephant in the room kind of stuff almost. And, so, hey, you want to come back for a lap dance? Promise I won't cough on you or, you know, whatever.
Yeah, that kind of stuff.
Outdoors, are there spaces for private and lap dances and things? Or?
Yeah, and I've heard that we're the only club in Portland that's still doing lap dances right now. Everything else is just stage for the other clubs that are open with tents. And, I mean, it's not amazing, obviously. It's still a tent. We still had to create an outdoor lap dance room, basically with no budget because, you know, the club's been closed too. They haven't been making any money either.
Yeah.
And they still have rent to pay, just like the rest of us. So.
Yeah, I just don't. I don't know how a lot of small businesses are doing it. And the thing that I don't know that I have the hardest time understanding is, a parent whose child is too young to be on their own at home, but old enough to be in school, and the parent has a non virtual job. I'm like, what are they doing?
Well, I think childcare is open in some capacity, but yeah, it's
or affording that though, you know, I'm mind-blowing to me.
So glad I don't have kids because I would have no idea how to navigate that at right. all.
Right. And like I said, you used to teach high school, so I know I'm like, okay, so the virtual school for a 7-year-old boy. and then these childcare facilities now, they are like, oh, we're teachers now too? Like it's kind of a wild it's wild to me. And I'm all for the safety, and also I just am sort of confused by how we haven't had a little more help for those folks. But hey, here we are.
Well, I mean, the MO so far has been like, just let everybody figure it out on their own, which, yeah, great plan if you're the guy telling people that, but doesn't really work for the rest of us.
Right, it kind of has been a like, how much longer can we get away with not giving anything to them? Oh, they're figuring it out. Oh, they have ingenuity. Good for them.
Let's talk about some stuff for another couple months. confuse them again.
Congress took a couple months off right around, and it was their normal time that they typically take off, but it was like, maybe not this year, you know? I don't know.
Maybe not.
Anyway.
You can Zoom from your house in the Aspens, right? Yeah.
Hey.
Yeah.
You got an internet connection, I presume. Presume. All right. There we go. Wordplay. That's your wordplay, in fact, is kind of a little bit of how, and I hear that a decent amount, because ultimately, I mean, I think most folks understand that, you know, and we won't get too tacky with the money, but making money is, you're more likely to make money with one connection in a night that lasts over the course of several songs or hours, than none with the individuals and just trying to make the money from the stage. Like, I think people get that the math of that, but, so I mean, are you constantly trying to do what you can to make that connection to get that money? I guess is kind of,
yeah. I mean, when it comes down to it, that's my job.
Yeah.
Is I am an entertainer, and you know, for some people that come in and they honestly do not like dances, that's not what they want to do. They do want to sit and watch the stage and talk to me. Mm-hmm. Then it's all I'm doing is the art of entertaining through conversation. But a lot of people do want dances, so you know, it's a little bit of both. But yeah, I'm an entertainer when it comes down to it.
Sure. Yeah. And in Portland, maybe less so than other places, but do you have to sort of educate some folks to know, like, hey, me talking to you is a part of, it's valuable. There's money that should be exchanged here.
So I'm really glad that I work in Portland, because there are so many strip clubs. There are so many dancers. Everybody has been to a strip club. So you don't have too much of that ignorance walking in the door. But, you know, you don't do dances, you just want to talk. That is the intentional ignorance that I see, because people want to forget that if you're not buying a dance and I'm still talking to you, I'm doing it for free, unless you're tipping me for my time.
Right.
And people hate to get reminded of that.
Right. And so, and you know, I've witnessed sometimes get a little bit snippy, and you're like, well, what are you doing getting upset about the way this is supposed to work? I think if you like sat someone down and were like, hey, how do you think, you know, a strip club works and a dancer stripper makes their money, and I bet you they'd go like call them on it, they'd be like, oh yeah, that makes sense. But it's like, when the moment comes, they're like, how much can I get for free, you know?
Yeah, I mean, everybody's always looking for that. It's human nature, honestly. Yeah.
Well, if you're a listener and a customer or a future customer of a strip club, just recognize that the time is valuable, and that should be paid for as well. And just be like, hey, I understand. I'm just doing stage. I'm just sitting on the rail on the rack and giving money that way, and don't expect anyone to spend any time with you.
Yeah, I mean, another thing is, like, if you don't get dances, if we have a bar tab, pay our bar tab. If we have a stage fee, pay our stage fee. You know, if I've been sitting with you for 15 minutes and you know that you're not going to buy a dance, slide me a 5 or something. Slide me a 10, you know?
Yep.
Because the other thing is, a lot of people, as a customer, they come into the strip club and they see us, you know, taking piles of money off stage, you know, and they know that lap dances are expensive, and they just assume, because of how it's portrayed in, like, media and movies and stuff, that, you know, we're making like 2-3 grand a night and it's so fun and all this. And it's like, that's not the situation for a lot of people, you know. I do pretty well, I think, and I'm super, super glad that I do. But, you know, a lot of people, you know, do have kids or have bigger bills and debts than I do, or they're supporting someone else. So a lot of it just, we don't get to keep. We don't. Mm-hmm. We're like everybody else. We're just trying to pay our fucking bills, you know?
Exactly. And most of the folks that are frequenting, most folks frequenting a strip club have a set wage or salary or something of that nature. And so, you know, that needs to be an understanding of, like, keep in mind, I also work here some days 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. And nothing is happening. Or some days it's, you know, or sometimes I'm here on a Tuesday night and not a lot's happening. And so, regardless of how much you saw me this one time take money off the stage, that doesn't mean that, you know, you shouldn't be contributing on this night. Because, well, hey, look, she just got $300 on a stage somehow. Doesn't work that way, fellas and ladies. Because sometimes ladies don't.
Well, because people see the big impressive thing, and then that's what they remember.
Yeah.
But honestly, if you're there as a customer and, you know, I do a stage set and I only get $3, which is fairly often, honestly, mm-hmm. You know, you probably weren't even paying attention because you probably didn't tip. Otherwise, I would have gotten more than $3.
Yeah.
But you weren't paying attention. So that moment isn't in your mind that, oh, look, the same thing that she made $50 for 45 minutes ago, she made $3 for this time.
53 divided by 2 now becomes 26.5, and that ain't that much, you know? So that's great. You know, now that you're talking through this, I kind of wish that there was some sort of, I don't know, that it was typical in comedy clubs for the time that I spend talking to people after the show to be considered a part of my time. And we get tipped for that. We need to start making that the norm. Let's do it. Normalize tipping comedians and strippers.
And servers and bartenders and all the people that rely on tips to make their money.
All service. Yeah, I've been seeing some arguments about, oh my gosh, why do we have to tip? Just paying. All right, shut up.
Because the reason your food is so cheap is because your server and your line cook are hella underpaid.
Hello. Also, if I need to pay 20 cents more for a Big Mac to have someone make 15, I'll be fine. And also, I don't think McDonald's is struggling. They're going to figure it out.
They could afford to pay people 15 without changing a single menu price.
That's true. That's true. That is the go-to argument, too. It's very odd. Anyway.
No, just the CEO doesn't want to make less money. Mom and pop businesses, whole different thing.
Right. That argument, there's fair. All right, we won't get too deep into that.
Yeah, I worked in restaurants for a long time, so I could go way into it.
So that was what you did before. I don't like to assume that people need to stop dancing for any reason at all. You can dance as long as you want, but presumably you won't forever. Do you have visions of what that would look like, or when that might be, or
I
anything like that?
don't. I
Yeah.
should, but I don't.
Ah.
Yeah, I have no idea what I'm gonna do.
Sure, you're very young, we're in a creative field. You're a creative, so creatives are always figure stuff out because that's what we do. But for now, you're doing it, and it's working out fine. And you have a day job that is a career type day job, or it's just a day job that makes you some money. Or I don't know how to
Stereotype.
ask that question.
I mean,
Okay.
it's not
Yeah.
like I don't have a bachelor's or anything like that, but it's my chosen profession, so.
Gotcha. That's great. I quit mine to do stand-up comedy, so but I did them concurrently for about 7 years. Taught high school and did stand-up for about 7 years concurrently, and then took the leap. So and it's working out well, except for the last year. It's been okay, not bad, especially with the government giving me some cheese. I mean, what do you? I'll take it. When things get back to typical, let's say that's soon, let's assume. Maybe it's already
Hoping.
happened by the time of the release of this. We can only hope. And I go into a club, and you're working, and you're on the stage, and you're dancing. What song are we hearing? Or what songs?
Oh, I danced to so much, honestly. Like, a lot of girls have their specific stuff, or they'll ask the DJ for something, and I love our DJs, so I'm like, just play me. I'm in this kind of mood.
Okay.
Because honestly, don't know if this is true or not, but none of the DJs have like ripped me a new one for it. It's as a DJ, it's kind of your job to like know the right music for the mood and keep people enjoying themselves. It's your job to play the music they didn't know they wanted to hear, kind of.
I like that.
And I will, if it's honestly up to me, I want to dance to like 2000s Green Day, which is going to empty the club out.
American Idiot isn't a banger for the clubs.
Turns out, no.
Have you? I watched that. There was a musical called American Idiot, and it was based on that album.
I have watched that.
Oh, it's
It's
so good.
beautiful. But no, I dance to, as far as slow stuff, like Amy Winehouse, Lana Del Rey type
Ah,
stuff.
okay, I'm into it. Yeah.
But also like Megan Thee Stallion, Cardi B. I like Blueface a lot.
I'm not familiar. I'll have to take a peek.
Marilyn Manson, the Black Keys. It spans a lot.
Fun. Love it.
Yeah.
You obviously enjoy it. Are the what are the I mean, is it if someone's like, what are the tough parts of your job? Is it just like, oh, same things as tough parts of other jobs? Or are there specific things that are like, this is kind of the thing I God, if it wasn't for this, man, it'd be a perfect job.
I mean, they're kind of all like nitpicky things, except for like the customers that are like too rough, which is then just like, well, I need to go get security, which nobody likes when that happens. Nobody wants to get kicked out of the club. I don't want you to get kicked out of the club, but I need you to respect my boundaries. Otherwise, none of this works.
How do you convey those boundaries? Is it like an expectation that they know the laws of the state and city and rules of the club and hey, follow them? Or is it like, because they are the, you kind of alluded to it, but it is different club to club and state to state and even dancer to dancer. So
and county to county too.
Right. So how do you?
So that's one of the good things about Portland is that, first off, here, the reason there are so many strip clubs is because nudity is protected under freedom of speech. So statewide and countywide, we have a lot of leeway that a lot of other localities don't. Mm-hmm. But also, since there are so many, most people at least have a pretty good general idea. They might not know like specific club rules,
right?
But they've probably been, or they know to ask.
There you go.
But I also give a rundown if I feel like someone wants to buy a dance. So I'll kind of pose all the rules as positive things.
Ah.
So like, Bible Belt states, you can't get all the way naked. You can't touch me. I can't touch you, that kind of thing. So I'm like,
right.
We can touch from the waist up, or like we're still doing dances or something like that.
Right.
You know, just changing how people are viewing the information.
That's brilliant. And that's how I spent the last 10 years learning that every single part of life, there's value in doing. Like, I know when I coach sports, it was always super important to be like if you're, I love golf. I'm kind of a typical suburban white boy. And I play
tennis. I'm not any better.
Hey, I lettered for 4 years. I got most improved 2 years in a row. I don't know if that's good. That seems bad. How bad was I that first year? But, if you think, don't hit it in the water, you're more likely to, because our mind doesn't do well with do and don't, it does well with the topic. And so that's similar to the idea of like, don't touch me here, don't do this, don't do that, don't, you can't, don't, it's much better to be like, you can, and you are, you know what you should do. So much more of an enjoyable way to receive information. And
or
then,
we can.
We can, that's good.
Because then you're including them.
I like it. Also,
Both of us are already back there in that scenario.
Yeah. Ooh, that's great. You're
very
good.
I use a lot of royal we.
Very good, I like it. In Portland, I presume this is sort of less, I don't know, common, but do you get concerned about like the law or police or undercover or any of the things that may affect the ability for the club to stay open or for you to get in trouble personally or whatever?
So I'm super lucky in that I almost never have to worry about cops coming in and like checking for like solicitation or prostitution or extras or anything like that. But I do worry about the OLCC, which is our liquor license board, because they basically decide what bars, restaurants, and clubs can stay open and cannot stay open. So like even just since I've started dancing, almost no one will hire an 18-year-old dancer. It used to be some could, some couldn't, depended on the club. They just had to have an area where you could be, or like a plan set up so that person couldn't get to alcohol, basically. Mm-hmm. But it's such a liability on the club that most have stopped doing it because they're afraid to get like shut down and fined by the OLCC for providing liquor to a minor. So you know, that's an opportunity for a huge swath of people that's gone. So because now you basically can't dance until you're 21.
Yeah, you it's that kind of thing of like having that one extra thing to monitor that is so specific to maybe just one dancer or two or whatever, that I could see it very quickly just getting lax and lax and lax, and then all of a sudden the liquor board comes in and they're like, hey, what you got going on here? And you're like, oh, that's right. And then it's over. Bars and restaurants that opened when it was supposed to be 50% capacity or whatever, and it's like very quickly people just walked in, took off masks, 50% became 70%, and because it's just so hard to monitor, and then like you're just crossing your fingers you don't get caught basically. And
And OLCC right now also is in charge of making sure restaurants and bars do adhere to COVID things, so they've got double duty right now. And, you know, both of the clubs that I worked at, they used to have minors. So at Dancing Bear, there was a table set up and the underage girls could be on stage. They could be at that table, but they couldn't, you know, walk the floor and mingle with customers because all the customers had alcohol. So, you know, that stunts how much business they can do. And then at the other one, there's a special like stage basically that didn't have a rotation set up so that younger girls could be out standing on that stage and basically just talk to customers. And so they could be on that stage, they could be on the other stages, and they could be in the dressing room. But you can't like sit down at individual tables with customers.
See, in Seattle and Washington, it's not, alcohol is not allowed at all. It's kind of wild, but
I like to make fun of you guys for that.
We deserve it. It's a very odd, I mean, we're very similar to Oregon in general, the whole state, and then Seattle is very similar to Portland, and it's just so wild how different that is. But there was one club in Seattle that I knew had under 21 year old dancers, which I believe was legal. I don't even know. But
18 to 21 is the,
presumably in Washington that would be too, especially since there was no alcohol. But I happen to know that they would drink in the back and then bring it back out. And like,
yeah, because that's the other thing is the girls aren't trying to pay attention to that rule too.
Right. She would joke that she's like, I need this. That was her joke. But but I mean, that's worse. I mean, that's more dangerous or more than just having alcohol.
Then you don't have a bartender paying attention to, is that girl getting overserved? Because the bartender's like, that girl's not drinking.
Yeah, presumably she's not. Wild.
Dancing Bear, like I said, it's super close to Vancouver. It's right on the border. So I would get a lot of people that were coming in from Washington, and I've had people drive all the way down from like Spokane and Seattle to come to Portland strip clubs because of the rules that you guys have in Washington.
Yeah, we're weirdos. So I don't get it. But hey, you know, to me, it's like
easy to impress.
What's that?
So you're easy to impress. It makes my job easier.
That's right. We're like, oh my God.
It's at the same time. Holy shit. I don't know if I can say that. I'm assuming I can.
You can say whatever you want. Yeah, by all means. I already flubbed up my words and said something stupid earlier. So I think we're good. So that's, we talked a bit about customers, and the kind of way I like to handle this part is like, what's a perfect patron / what would you like to tell like people who are listening, and maybe they've been to strip clubs, maybe they've never been at all, but like, here's what you need to know. Besides give me a bunch of money, here's what I want you to know. And you come into a strip club.
I mean, like I said before, tipping for time. If you know you're not going to get a dance, stage fees, especially if you offer us a drink and we say no, like either just give us the money you were willing to pay for a drink, because like it's not healthy for us to just come in at 5:30 and drink until 11 when we're supposed to go home.
Yeah,
like that's rough. And if you can do it, it sets up a really bad cycle for yourself. Definitely. So just do something so that we're not turning money down by not getting drunk with you. Or, you know, offer us food. Like, if I'm not drinking, it's probably because I'm already drunk. Buy me some tater tots or something.
I'll put them in my G-string and eat them for later. Eat them later.
Other than that, I just say, like, $2 per song minimum on stage. I know in Portland, dance prices went up. It's not $20 a lap dance anymore, because that's what people were charging and paying in the 80s.
Yeah.
And there's just, everything's too expensive. You can't do $1 per song anymore.
Right.
That would be that. And don't push our boundaries, you know? We're people. It's pretty simple, honestly. Yeah.
And you are people. And so that brings us to, for people who wouldn't darken the door of a strip club, they don't want to go, they're never going to go, or they may go someday in the future if their mind gets changed, but whatever. How do you convey to them, like, hey, this is work. This is normal work. I'm a typical person. What can we tell them to help them understand that? Besides just, hey, did you listen to the last hour? She's a typical person. But I mean, like, do you have, you know, what would you want them to hear?
I mean, we're not victims. By and large, most girls do this consensually or under the normal amount of economic duress that everyone else has.
Right.
You know, we don't need saved, that kind of stuff. But also, like, you show up to your job dressed in your suit and you clock in and you do your shit and then you go home and live your life. And, you know, my office has a pole, but at the end of the day, guess what? I'm going to go home. I'm going to, you know, peel off my fake eyelashes, put on a hoodie, lay in bed and watch Netflix with my cat. Like, it's, it really is. Yeah. It's not like I'm some weird creature living a whole fantasy life.
Yeah. I take my bra off one arm at a time, just like you. I just happen to do it while I'm at work.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's the same. That's great. And I, you know, I mean, my mom won't listen, but if she were to listen, that would be a good message for her to hear.
Or, you know, just
wonderful, wonderful woman. And she's really progressive and a partier, but she's just like, not my son, you know, whatever.
Also, you know, just listen to things like this where, you know, you're being exposed and you're having conversations with us outside of that work context.
Totally. That was the core. I kind of alluded to that Twitter argument I had that was so silly, but that was the core of it to me, was like, wouldn't you think that, you know, it was about race relations and it was a, it's just a white guy, and he literally had a picture of him and his son out on the golf course, and it was very clear they were suburban, relatively wealthy fellows. And I was like, what makes you think you know more than someone who has studied race relations or that happens to be a person of color? Like, wouldn't you assume that they know more? Like, give it a Google, give it a read, give it a, you know, and this idea that people who would never darken the door of a strip club have never spoken to someone, as far as they know, that happens to be a stripper, would somehow know or have any insight or be, you know, an expert is very silly.
The other thing is people that would never come in, they often assume that, like, the business itself is dirty, or we're dirty, or, like, something like that, or, like, we all do extras, and that's not true. You're like, I'm sorry, have you seen a stripper's asshole? It is sparkling. We are clean people. We have to be.
They have seen them, but they just won't admit to it. They do it in the privacy of their own basement with their wives upstairs. So they pretend like they don't. Well, that's great. And on that note, being a, you know, sort of a typical regular old gal, I'm curious always if, like, everybody in your life knows what you do and how your family feels about things and if you care.
Well, I'm from Ohio, so basically all of my family still lives there. My mom knows I do this, so I'm assuming all of the people that she calls on a regular basis also know that I am a dancer.
Her book club is aware.
Yeah, all my aunts and uncles probably know on her side of the family. But, you know, there's some of my family that don't, and I know that there's some of my family that don't approve, but also, like, I could give a rat's ass.
There you go.
If they want to, that's the thing. If you don't like what I do, pay my bills for me so I can stop.
I think that should happen. And if you want to pay any of her bills or support any of the bill paying, go to OnlyFans and check out, here it is again, dancer_nextdoor, Ramona, Mickey Ramona. It's very fun. I think I got tricked with Ramon. Like, it's not the Ramones, but just something about that made me think, like, is this named after a musician? I don't know why I had that thought, but it sounds like Mickey Ramona definitely sounds like someone who would have been playing in a band in the late 70s. But please, and those are all the handles: Instagram, Twitter, OnlyFans, dancer_nextdoor. Ramona, you were lovely, lovely, lovely to speak to, and thank you for the insight. And if you're in Portland, go to maybe Dancing Bear, but also DV8, no longer Dancing Bear at all.
No.
When things open,
first sale
up.
Sign on the building, it's gone.
I thought the Washington one was done.
No, I have no idea about that one. But
oh, I misunderstood. Well, there you go. Don't go. you can go. It's just there's nothing going to be happening.
You can see a really cool Paul Bunyan statue.
Oh, yeah. It's right by there. That's right.
It's right on the mat. Don't even have to get off.
D, the letter. V, the letter. And 8, the number. Check it out if you are in Portland. It's in Southeast Portland. Again, thank you so much. And I'll see you maybe Saturday, actually. But if not, relatively soon. Thanks, everybody. Bye. You can stay for a second.
Well, thanks for having me.